Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurb. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. Hey, here we go. On today's Minority Corner, we've got joining us in the guest co-host spot, Natalie Orozco. She is a Latina spiritual medicine woman, coach, intersectional feminist. She does feminine strategy consulting, Virgo Libra rising, and she's also an advocate for radical self-love and social climate justice. All around powerhouse, which of course for Women's History Month, we're bringing out the big lady guns. Is that a thing? It is now. First of all, at the top of the show, we have a PSA. Listen, y'all, if your family, friends, or loved ones are watching Tucker Carlson, they're in danger, girl. Netflix is trying to shame us from sharing our passwords. TV legend Norman Lear and Laverne Cox are teaming up. This is a BFD. We talk all about it. We are side-eyeing the Vatican and their most recent stance on being queer. Come on, New Vatican. We were straight up Tyra Banks rooting for you, and look what you've done, new Pope. And this leads us into a discussion about being queer and having a relationship growing up with religion and finding our own spirituality. Plus, hate crimes against Asian American folks are on the rise. And Natalie actually has a personal connection to one of the most recent attacks here in Oakland. This cannot stand, y'all. In the main corner, in honor of Women's History, we gotta come correct, y'all, because y'all don't know your history, so we're going back to the basics, okay? I'm hearing too many myths about Rosa Parks, so we need to come correct. So I got five myths that we are busting about Miss Rosa Parks to get it correct, okay? And also, who is Claudette Colvin? See, you don't even know. All right, class is in session. Let's go. Natalie keeps the celebration of women going as we celebrate some women in politics who are just getting shit done and being some of the first. And then Natalie's got some tips for female identifying folks in navigating these crazy chaotic times and a call to action for folks who benefit from male privilege and overall advice as we birth into spring. This is an action-packed, jam-packed, action jammy jam packed episode of Minority Corner. So much goodness. So we're gonna jump into it. Get ready to learn, laugh, and play. Let's go. Natalie's in the house.
Hola, hola.
Hello, hello. Okay, Natalie, I'm so glad that you're here. You already, we were talking a few days ago, and you just made my life so much easier. You brought, I was in a very crazy place. You brought lavender over to my space, and I just already, so yeah. Big thank you for just coming in and being a great friend.
You're welcome. I loved it. I live in Oakland. I drove over to the bridge. I got a little car share. And then we got, what did I get? A chai and an empanada. That's a very San Francisco treat.
100%. Yes, absolutely. It move over rice-a-roni. It's empanada and a chai.
With dirty chais.
Okay, Natalie, I have a huge PSA that I want to start us off with. Boom, boom, boom. PSA alert. So, if you have friends, I've seen two segments on this. So, Tucker Carlson. So, do you know who Tucker Carlson is?
No. I was like, who is this guy?
Okay, totally. I'm glad. You know what? I love that you don't know. What a beautiful world you live in that you don't know what fuckface Tucker Carlson, who he is.
Is he a conservative white man?
Yes. How did you know?
I don't hang out in those circles. Like, I'm not allowed in. So I don't. Thank you.
I don't either, but I always like to peek in. I always like, you gotta know. I always like to know, what are these fools doing? What are they saying? So he's like a Fox News host, and he's like one of the top primetime most watched propaganda bullshit stuff. And I've seen two segments on Tucker Carlson that not only has me clutching my pearls, all the pearls are clutched. I'm clutching your pearls. I'm clutching everybody's pearls. Everybody clutch your pearls. So like, he's,
what did he do?
Okay, so he's been around for a long time, and he is... So I've seen two segments. On one, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and then on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, they did two segments on him, and both were like, okay, whoa. Like, I already knew he was an asshat, but to a whole other level, like, basically, here's my PSA. If you know anybody that's watching Tucker Carlson in your life, you got work to do because he's literally indoctrinating white supremacy. Like, he literally is coded message to the point where the white supremacists are in their little meetings are like, well, Tucker Carlson's like saying it better than we can. There was one family because he's like, it's this whole like David Duke, okay. Grand Wizard David Duke, who almost won a Senate seat in Louisiana back in the 90s, who also realized he had to take off his robe and put on a suit. Like, now they've got khakis and tiki torches, and the language is coded, right? Like, it's hidden, and they're hiding in plain sight, right?
In plain view.
In plain
view. Are they hiding?
But they...
They're not hiding to you and me.
Right.
To you and me, we're like, we see your cloak.
So...
But to other white people, it's like, he looks like one of those Bible carriers that go to your door.
We
one
see
of those,
it. We called? Know who you
Jehovah
are.
Jehovah Witnesses.
Yes.
He's like, a Jehovah Witness of white supremacy, it
I mean,
like.
Even, I don't know, Scientologists, Mormon, the branding sex cult, he bad, okay? That's the point. He bad. Go away. And so I'm saying this to all say, like, I think, you know, I'm asking white people in general or people who have people in their lives that watch Fox News, you got work to do, but we see you. So like, I'm flipping tables. I'm clutching pearls. Clearly I need to be up in a straight jacket because my hands are too busy, like just doing stuff.
Tucker Carlson. Cancel him.
Well, so if you've got family that or friends that are watching this, go wake them the fuck up. Because sequels are never better than the original. Well, sometimes.
Rarely.
But I don't want to see Insurrection Part 2, Electric Boogaloo. I don't want to see it.
If you have a family member who's watching this man, I love that, I don't even know, Tucker Carlson.
And you're already coming
just,
for him.
Just
you're on
grab
your phone,
your...
You're like, what's his name? I'm sending out a text message to my girls right now. He canceled.
Everyone canceled. Allies align. This, I need you to tackle this week. No, I just think just grab the person.
Yes, that's your assignment. That's your
assignment. Turn off the TV.
That's your assignment
for
today.
Turn off the TV. I heard ratings hurt their feelings. Done. Turn off the TV. Grab your friend. Boom. Take him outside. Go for a walk.
Mm-mm. And go get them a book or something. Like, get them something to read. Go have
a
conversation with them.
Dirty spice latte
like,
helps. Dirty spice chai latte helps.
Yes. Go take them for a walk. Go get them a dirty spice latte and an empanada. And go let them know why, you know, they're being brainwashed. So after the election was called for Joe Biden, I knew January 6th was going to be danger. I didn't know it was going to be to the length that it was, but I saw it coming. And same thing with this recall. They tried to recall Gavin Newsom 6 times since he's been elected 25 months ago. And they've got the signatures. And now we're going to have to waste our taxpayer dollars and time and energy. It's a slippery slope is all I'm saying. They're very tricky. They're already recalling all this great voter turnout.
Yeah, the canceling mail-in voting. Democracy is not guaranteed, people. It's not guaranteed. Mm-hmm. Don't get comfortable. Mm-hmm. Don't get comfortable.
Yep.
We barely made it. We barely got Biden and Harris in there. Barely.
Barely.
And we almost went to civil war for it. So this isn't a chance to chill out and drink a smoothie. I take back what I said. You take your chai dates.
Put that empanada down. What are you doing eating empanada?
Reward system. Only when they take back their anti-racist comments do they get a bite. Reward system.
Oh, there you go. Okay. That was my PSA. Don't try to, you know, don't spend too much time on the Netflix. Although Netflix is trying to like shame people into not sharing passwords.
Admit that I would use my I'm one of the people that they're cracking down on. I would use my ex-boyfriend's password for 4 years, even after we weren't together. And my girlfriends were like, you can't do that anymore. And so I finally became an adult and I got the one password. I own my own Netflix account. I feel like such an adult. It is my own on my devices. However, people need to, communities need to take care of themselves. And especially, I feel personally offended if I'm a Latina. Like, my Latino families, there really are 8 people in the house. That really is 16 devices.
Right. Yeah.
So you also got to think, like, this isn't like hetero 4 people, 2 adults, 2 kids, and a dog. Like, they're intergenerational families. And you also got to make room for that.
Speaking of television, here's something that's really exciting. I mean, I want to talk about this for a while, but Norman Lear is going to be doing a show with Laverne Cox.
And I know you're Laverne Cox, but I do not know this other person. Who is Norman Lear?
Fill in the blank for you. He is 98 fucking years old, okay?
Oh, my God.
Been in the game. So Norman Lear, he helped develop sitcoms. He developed sitcoms like All in the Family, Sanford and Son, One Day at a Time, and the remake One Day at a Time that was focusing on a Latinx family on Netflix. So you got to share the password sometimes to be able to see it. The Jeffersons, Good Times, Maude. That's all him. Norman Lear, y'all, this is a really big deal. Norman Lear doing a show with Laverne Cox. This is, you know, with a Black trans woman front and center on a primetime sitcom. So Variety Report said it's going to be a half hour comedy and it's going to follow car wash owner Henry, whose estranged child comes home to Alabama after 17 years, but he must do some soul searching as he comes to terms with the fact that his adult child is a trans woman, Desiree. And so comedian George Wallace will be playing her dad. And Norman Lear is just very famous for presenting real life issues and putting some sort of sitcom twist to it for us to be able to learn, laugh, and play with. It's essentially Minority Corner. So, like, what Norman Lear does, like, he is pretty much, like, invented the sitcom, and he's had successful sitcoms like every decade. Most of these sitcoms are like a spinoff of the like, all of them have like all the characters are spinoffs from somebody else. Like, Maude was a spinoff. Maude, which I believe is Bea Arthur from Golden Girls.
Oh, my gosh. Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yeah. And I think so. Like, someone's tweeting at me. Well, it is in my head, okay? All in the Family, I believe, is where you get Archie Bunker, who was sort of like this behind the times guy. So who was like behind the times, sort of like things were changing, like get with the times, man. But he was the lead of the show, but like the butt of the jokes. And it was sort of like, Norman Lear's always kind of pushing conversation through his sitcoms, you know, like with the Jeffersons, his family who is moving on up. And so now he's doing a sitcom with Laverne Cox, which is like a huge deal, because to me, it's like the stamp of approval. Not that you needed approval, but it's like being seen. Because Norman Lear, again, is like the godfather of sitcoms, right? Like, he just has really helped, again, every decade and generation. Like, all right, I'm going to, you know, focus a show on Black people. And okay, now it's the Jeffersons, or, you know, like, he's just has always been, I don't know, just something about that. In some ways, it's like, okay, a little, you know, but I don't know. It's a straight white man who's evolved with the times at 98 years old. And I just think I'm excited for this project.
That's amazing. It sounds amazing. I mean, if you're going to get the best, it sounds like you're going to go get the best. And he's 98 years old. I'm still impressed that he can work at 98 years old. Like,
it's normal. He's a treasure. 98. It's like amazing. So hats off. Actually,
you're living your purpose.
I think there is a really good RuPaul's podcast. I think that he had Norman Lear on there. I think that he did. I could be making, maybe it was a fever dream. I don't know. I had too many empanadas
the
other
night. We'll
double check. Okay.
I mean, either way, tweet this and maybe it'll happen.
Okay. Well, we were side-eyeing. I think we're doing more than side-eyeing Tucker Carlson. I don't know what is the next step. Like, we got a side-eye. Well, I'm not trying to get anybody angry, but Vatican, what the fuck is going on? Sorry to say, I don't know if this is blasphemous. But Vatican
probably
is. I can say that my grandmother, she was a practicing Catholic. So I have Catholic blood. I don't know if it works that way. But yes. So bad news. Yes. Well, bad news. So the Vatican has pretty much come down and been like, sorry, gays. You can't get married. We're not blessing you. Like, no. So they described it as same-sex unions as a choice, and they said that it would be that they cannot be recognized as objectively ordered to God's plan. And they said that they cannot bless a sin.
They missed the memo. They're so, not getting with the times.
Yeah, that's it.
No.
Vatican, excuse me. No, I think that's exactly. And then we just walk away. We just gather them around Vatican.
I heard for the like the people in the LGBT community that found Catholicism or anything about it as a spiritual path for them. I was raised Catholic. I checked out as a woman because I was like, I can't be a priest. I can only be a nun. Like, all right, I've hit my ceiling. Like, let me go elsewhere. But like, if that's your way to God, it's fucked up. It's fucked up. It's not cool. Mm-mm. They're wrong. And this is a pope that I like. I like him because of his stance on climate change and his stance.
Right. I thought he was progressive.
So did I.
Thought he was like,
he's got like a master's degree in like, I don't know, environmental science or something. Like, I just thought facts mattered at some point in this, their version of an administration, the Vatican, this round of the Vatican's administration. Mm-hmm. No, super disappointed. Yeah. No.
Yeah. And I think like, again, because like I've moved on from my own, you know, my grandmother, she was Catholic and my, you know, grew up in a Baptist household. And I've gone on my own spiritual journey in terms of what my spiritual relationship is for my own personal self. Right. I've had to go and find that. Yeah. But for some people, they are still connected to the church. And here's my sad, like, Mr. Vatican, I don't know if that's what they're called, but excuse me, Mr. Vatican, you're going to murder people. Like, people are going to, like, this is, you're condoning murder and self-harm, self-hate. It's interesting because I'm, you know, such an evolved, I'm 35 years old. So, and in some ways I've dealt with a lot of my own self-hatred or inner demons that have come through a religious upbringing or the folks around me who are religious or whatnot, right? And I've seen them evolve as well. I'm just thinking about the kids, you know, the kids who are still growing up in there, and that like people are going to lose their lives or harm is going to happen where kids are still going to be kicked out of their homes. Like, again, LGBT homeless youth make, it's like at least up over 40% of the homeless population are LGBT homeless youth of the youth category, right? This is going to hurt and harm. You're more likely, I forget, this documentary was old, but I'll never forget the thing that like sprung my coming out was watching the documentary for The Bible Tells Me So. And the, I was doing the show Corpus Christi. Remember my show Corpus Christi about like, you know, if Jesus was alive today as a home, like as a queer man with this queer band of disciples. Cause that's what they were. Those disciples were like hippies, like free love, like spreading out just the message of love. Right. And I'll never forget where we, as a group, we watched this documentary for The Bible Tells Me So. And the statistic of, gay people are 7 times more likely to kill themselves, right? And we were observing the day of silence, and I hadn't heard my voice that entire day. We did a silent protest all around campus, and I just was crying. And the first time I heard my voice was at that moment. And I was like, I can't be silent anymore. And it's so, families are being destroyed, and he literally has the power to save lives and save families. I think about if my grandmother was alive, I don't know where her opinions or thoughts would be, but I know whatever the Vatican thought or said have an impact.
Yes, I agree. It's a lot. It's condoning a lot of families to a lot of pain and suffering and harm. I worry about the violence. The fathers now have permission to beat their sons and daughters because their pope has said it's a sin, right? This isn't wrong. This is the devil in you, or whatever version of the story they tell themselves or that they create. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
And you're allowing people to harm each other, and you're ripping up families, and worse, you're creating self-hate, and the suicide rate is so terrifying.
And it's so the opposite of just, it's just the opposite of everything. If it's about love and compassion, that's what every great religion has. And that's what it's all about love. And it's like anything that would be condoning hatred towards anyone and anybody. And when we talk about like every organization that has had power, any community that has power, it's what is it, like, it's reparations time for everybody, or it's like everyone's is having to forgetting a really cool witty phrase, but it's like the comeuppance, right? Like everyone is having to take accountability There it is. It's back to that. It's accountability culture for the wrongs that these groups or communities have done. Like a lot of religions have done a lot of harm in the sake of their religion to other people and other groups and communities. And it sucks because there's also a lot of good that they have done for people. But there's just, like,
questionable.
I guess I talk about the good where people feel like they have a sense to, like, they have faith or they... A community.
Yes, but you can get that anywhere.
Oh, I know, girl. But like,
for surprise, there are other places to get
that. Spoiler alert. And I think it kind of goes to too what you're saying, like the power of people at the top or in charge. What you say matters, because we're seeing a rise in hate crimes against Asian American folks. Still, right now.
Last week, my neighbor was murdered on my street. I kid you not. I live in, should I say where I live?
Don't give your address. Don't give your address.
I live in Oakland and I live
at 524 Natalie Street.
That is not a real address. That is not a real address.
Someone's on their way.
I live in Adams Point and we have an elderly neighbor. He's 75 or 79 or was 70, late 70s. And he would go for a walk every day. And on Thursday, he was pushed into the street by someone very sick, I think. Maybe he was schizophrenic. Maybe he had a mental illness. We're not sure. It's being charged as a hate crime. So this man has a history of violence. And he beat him. And his name was Mr. Park Ho. Mr. Ho was taken to the hospital and he didn't survive the night. He died. Mm. So on my street, and both of my roommates, I should say, are Asian Americans. They're female from Chinese descent. And it impacted us. It impacted our home. Mm. Of course it did. And I told you about this when we met last weekend. But we huddled together and we had dinner together. And we went and walked to the farmer's market together and sat and had breakfast the next day together. And there's just, we've created a little memorial where we're saying, remember him. And we've put flowers and candles and we're planning a vigil where we're going to like take back the night, almost take back our streets and hopefully walk the block or his regular route with candles and like let the world know that hate crimes are not okay here. And if we have a lot of elderly around us, right? We're like, we're a gentrified neighborhood. We've got the youngins who live with roommates and we've got the older folks and we live by a gas station and we live by the park where we've got a lot of other folks just hanging around and a lot of our homeless population set up tents there. You know, we're all living in the same area, very close to one another. So I've heard about that. The last stat I heard was from the New York Times and it was like hate crimes against Asian community members has gone up 1900%. Isn't that insane since COVID? Speaking of power and the influence of power, that's because Donald Trump was calling this the Kung Flu.
Right.
I mean, we can't make that sort of judgment. And it was totally okay to talk shit about people because they were not white for a very long time and to hurt them. Blame them.
Yeah. And it's back again. And then going back, you have folks like Fox News and Tucker Carlson that are continuing that. So I go back and call and get applauded.
They get applauded with ratings and documentaries of people taking notes and rewatching.
So I don't understand that if you have people in your life who are watching this, that you're just, I couldn't understand standing by. You're literally allowing them to like shoot up heroin. You know, like it's something that's so detrimentally dangerous or even like worse than that. You're helping them build atomic bombs that are going to murder other people. Like, how can anyone just now sit by when they have people in their lives that are part Fox News as it stands as an institution right now? It's a hate crime propaganda machine it's a white supremacist hate crime propaganda machine. That's what it is. So if you have people in your life who are watching it, that's what they're watching.
They're being indoctrinated. They're being recruited. They're being brainwashed. Red flags.
Yes. And you have to ask yourself, are you okay with that? This is like, again, like 1900%. Hello. You have a network that was devoted to just recycling nothing but that conversation. Anybody who used to be a solid, like, I am all for having, I want to hear actual conservatism. I want to hear those debates. I want to have actual conversations so I can win you over to my side, or also I can strengthen my ideas or see the holes where I'm not maybe thinking because I'm so like, yeah, yeah, hippie dippy. Let's all go. Okay. All right. Let me see some of the other things. But like, that's not what this is. This is, it's a cult. It's a cult of white supremacy.
A hate cult
of white supremacy that is so
desperate. You're selling hate.
Yes.
And people are chewing that up like it's, like you said, like not even heroin. Like it's brownies or something. Like right. It's mama's milk.
And I will say,
and it's not.
I think you've got to side-eye people who are, and I think some people accidentally absolutely do get indoctrinated, but there's something that it starts to tap into where eventually we as human beings have choice. There comes a point where you say yes, where you give into the cult like, you know, atmosphere. It can, because it's tapping into something that people are missing. Listen, I watch all the cult documentaries. I know, because I'm always afraid I'm going to fall into a cult. So I'm like, okay, let me watch all these documentaries.
You rewatch and happened. You take notes.
I take notes because I'm susceptible to cults. So I know that about myself. And so I am aware. And what I always see is like, wow, this whole entire, you know, Trumpism, white supremacy, it's an addictive cult. And it taps into. It gives them a community and a sense of peace and
sense
power
of meaning or and purpose. Meaning.
And they'll tell you that it's something else, but we have to get really honest and call a spade because time is ticking. The midterms are coming down the line and it's still dangerous. We're still in the danger zone.
And people are dying. Yeah. People are dying. People who don't get healthcare right now. People who are not getting vaccines. It's your privilege to not get vaccines and then go hang out with your essential workers who don't have access to a car or to get to save their life. Mm-hmm. Like you are actually this. If you really follow the trail, they're killing people.
There it is, and it's purpose.
This all leads to. Black, brown, and indigenous death.
Well, it's a tale as old as time. Everything old is new again. Remember that thing that happened in the 1600s? They're still doing it again. You know what? White supremacists, you played that track, okay? I'm tired of that song. The beat is whack.
Change it.
Change the beat. Great. Well, coming up next, ding, 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 ding. Class is in session because y'all think you know we got to do a history redo for Women's History Month. Y'all think you know about Rosa Parks, but you really don't have any idea. We are doing some Rosa Parks myth busting because you think you know Rosa Parks, but you have no idea. This is the Diary of Rosa Parks. Life is too short to sleep between anything less than really nice sheets. But maybe you looked at some of these other retailers, you were adding up all the numbers, carrying the two, calculating the interest you have to pay, and you were like, ah, not today, not worth it, I give up. Okay, don't give up, because actually I think it's time that y'all check out Brooklinen. So they work directly with manufacturers to make luxury available directly to you without having to pay those ridiculous luxury level markups. Oh! And Brooklinen is so much more than sheets, y'all. They got comforters, pillows, towels, even loungewear, and so much more. So you're definitely going to want to check this out. I was not much of a sheets guy. I used to just be like, okay, whatever I can get. I got Brooklinen sheets, and it's been just such a game changer. I feel like an adult, because as we talked about on Minority Quarter on this podcast, many of our guest co-hosts have come in and talked and stressed the importance of sleep. It is so important, so make sure that you're wrapping yourself up into some soft, silky, smooth, luxury sheets so you can get those sleeps. And be refreshed and ready to take on the day because we need you full and rested. We are well into this year, 2021. Treat yourself. And to help you do that, Brooklinen has a special offer for you. You're going to go to brooklinen.com and use promo code MINORITY to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more plus free shipping. So that is brooklinen.com and enter promo code MINORITY to get $25 off when you spend $100 or more plus free shipping. Brooklinen.com and use promo code MINORITY at checkout. Get your sleep on.
Tell us about Rosa Parks. I'm here for it. I'm so excited to be here for this episode.
Yes. Okay. So here we are. Ding, ding, ding. Classes in session. It's Women's History Month. And this wasn't actually even the story I was going to do. I was going to do something completely different. And then I was listening to Cicely Tyson's audiobook, which is absolutely amazing. Mm. But even she said something and I was like, hold up, that is not true. Like, she said something about Rosa Parks and she was like, oh, she was old and tired. And I was like, okay, this is not, okay, we got to re-talk
all
about
this. All this did not happen because she was tired.
Right, exactly.
But it did did also happen because she's a black woman who was tired.
Okay. Well, I guess you're teaching the class today. All right. There is myth number three. Okay. All right. No, this is good.
Trying to defend a black woman. Like, wait, but we are tired. Women are tired. But I think you mean another kind of tired. Tell us.
So we are talking about Rosa Parks because y'all don't know your history. So welcome to Myth Busting Rosa Parks Edition. Boom, boom, explosions. Boo, 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 boo. She needed room. I'm not getting up. That was like a very long like radio show.
Oh my God, that was amazing. What is that called?
That's the Rosa Parks entrance beginning. So, all right, we're talking about Rosa Parks. Really ignited this whole entire thing, really ignited the civil rights movement, and you're going to see why. So the first myth that we're going to bust, there's five myths that we're going to bust.
Okay.
The first one is that she was the first woman, the first black woman to refuse to give up her seat in a protest. And no, that did not happen. She was not the first one. Her first one was actually Claudette Colvin. So let's talk about Claudette Colvin for a hot second.
Applause for Claudette Colvin.
Snaps for Claudette.
Our history let you down and let
exactly.
You down.
We'll find out why this happened. So when she was 15, she refused to move to the back of her bus to give up her seat for a white person. Sound familiar? And this happened 9 months before Rosa Parks did the very exact same thing. And like, you know, what we remember Rosa Parks, but Claudette's like, hold up, I did the same thing. So hers happened March 2nd, 1955, anniversary of that just passed. Ides of March just happened. So what happened was, she took the bus home for high school. It happened to be Negro History Month, which a few weeks ago, Sam Jackson told us the history of how Black History Month and Negro History Week, it happened. People used to do it in different times. So class had just done Negro History Month. So she was fired up, right?
Yep.
They just got done studying Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, who was a former slave who became an abolitionist and a women's rights activist, right? Here we go, Women's History Month. And it also, too, I want to put a pause in this. All last month was Black History Month. I did so many histories about Black women, and then Women's History Month came along, and I'm still talking about Black women. And I'm also doing this for my own self because Black, even in my own mind, because we live in such a white supremacist world, I'm trying to unprogram my own self. In the same way that, like, when I think about Jesus, I'm still unprogramming, he ain't white. Like, he is, you know, dark skin, Middle Eastern looking, hot and sexy, all that stuff is still true. Jesus can get it. And so the same thing, like, Women's History Month, when I hear it, I often think about white women, right? Like when I first hear that, and it's and even though for all these years on Minority Corner we always are talking about women of color, and so some people are like, you're listening to this podcast like, another history about a black woman. First of all, Tucker Carlson, is that you? Is that you listening to this podcast, Tucker Carlson?
Or someone related to a family member who watches him and you've been listening to your grandma talk too much to you? Yes.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know what? You know what I got to say to you? Keep listening. Oddly specific. Do you know somebody? Who hurt you? Who hurt you, Natalie? We got names. Give me their
address. I'm tired.
Just like Rosa Parks. So we'll get to that.
And Claudette. So, will you say her
Colvin.
Last name?
Claudette
know
Colvin.
Her name.
Know Claudette her, Colvin. Say her name. So same thing. So yes. So, and also her class had been talking about the injustices that they were experiencing under Jim Crow, which I think is such a fascinating thing. They're on the bus. They're talking about, man, Jim Crow. Like, could you living through Jim Crow, being a teenager and just talking about the shit that you hate about Jim Crow, living it, like that's, let's let that sink in. She's like so tired of this direct. It's like we have a caste system today, but it's sneaky, right? It's like subtle. Fox News subtle. Well, they're not subtle, but like, and sometimes the caste system that we're in is not subtle, right? Like when you see, you know, these unarmed Black men being murdered, right? Or what happened to Breonna Taylor? Not subtle, but
yeah.
It's so direct, in your face, second class system. Like now it's gotten very crafty and sneaky. And like even just things like they can't eat at certain lunch counters. They're not able to try on clothes or shoes. They have to wear, she tells a story about when they can't go buy shoes at the store. They have to trace their foot on a brown paper bag, bring it into the store.
The brown bag and then test.
But like, yes. And like, it's just so, it's so wild that like, they can't even try on a shoe. They have to trace the outline of their foot and they're like, can you match this size? And that's how they get, cause yes. So long story long, she was fired up, right? This day she was fired up and the bus
empowered.
Driver was like,
another word.
She was empowered. She was feeling the strength of her ancestors. She was like, let's go. And the bus driver was like, you got to give up the seat because it's the law. Also, weird, right? I think we gloss over so many of these things that we learn, like, oh, it was illegal, like the law was she had to give up her seat for a white man. What?
That they had is to write wild. That shit in paper. They had to write that yes. shit in paper and have an entire police institution, what is it, formalize yeah, to, it, criminalize yes. it, enforce
yeah. it, all these tax dollars to make sure it's happening. And you know, the people are all about it. A lot of the white people, all about it. This is 1955. My dad was born in 1957. Like, people are still alive today where this shit was happening,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So, separate bathrooms, separate fountains, the works.
So two office, she was like, nope, I paid my fair share and it's my constitutional right. 15 years old, go off Claudette. And so she was like, well, I'm not going to walk off this bus voluntarily. So the two officers arrested her. And she said in an interview in her book, she said that her head was just so full of her Black history. She felt like Sojourner Truth was on one side pushing her down and Harriet Tubman was on the other side pushing her down and she couldn't get up. She was like, I felt, and it's like that Maya Angelou quote,
oh my God.
I come here as one, I stand as one, but I come as 10,000.
Yes.
All the ancestors. Oh my God.
That gives me chills.
Mm.
And so, it's part of the Rosa Parks history because, oh my God, if it was Harriet Tubman
mm-hmm,
sitting mm-hmm. Next to her, right? Imagine yes. these two women sitting next to her. Mm. They set the tone. They like fertilized yeah. the soil.
Yes. Right.
So that not like pregnancy, right? 9 months later, it was the tipping point.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. Wow, that's 9 months later. Damn. Whoa.
Women. Natalie. Women's perspectives.
Oh, my God. But it's true. Like, it's also just like how, you know, that like every ancestor, we all take that baton. Like, even right now, like, hopefully, like, I'm inspiring some like little, you know, little someone out there is like hearing this podcast and like, that guy swears a lot. And he said that he wanted to like, that Jesus can get it, but whatever, like they'll be inspired to take it on even further. So why didn't you hear about Claudette? Well, here's what happened. The NAACP and other Black organizations, now, mind you, they've been wanting to do a bus boycott for a long time, right? They've been because they saw how fucked up this was, and they're like, we've got to get national attention on this. And so they're yeah. looking for the right person to be the sort of poster child for this. Well, they felt that, you know, she was too young. She wasn't an adult. They didn't think that a teenager would be reliable. And also, colorism. She was very dark skin. Rosa Parks, fair skin,
lighter skin.
And I think, like, so colorism, it runs twofold. And one thing, like, you know, Rosa Parks gonna be the face of it. They also knew that like white people would probably be like, be more connected to seeing a Rosa Parks, right?
And an Rosa older woman, right? An older lady.
Well, I mean, she was, well, we'll get to that. Okay, we'll bust that myth in a second. But sure, yeah, for now, okay, yeah, sure, older lady. She was
older than
okay.
15.
Okay, she was older than 15, I'll give you that, sure. And so just like, it speaks like the colorism of it. One, and I see that the NAACP was playing the game of white supremacy, right? That like, you know, lighter, fairer skins. But the same thing, like the colorism does run, we have issues within I think all POC communities are having to come to terms with their own colorism issues as well. But also sometimes like black folks will use it. Like see Beyonce, she knows what's up. She's like, okay, I'm a lighter skinned black woman. Let me have this blonde hair. And white people just eat it up. And then they were like, oh my God, she's black. When she was like, let's get in formation. Hello, black people. And they're like, oh God, she's black. We forgot, you know. Other thing about Claudette. She was also, remember you talked about that pregnancy 9 months? Well, you must have had a pregnant thought. Claudette was pregnant as well. And so they were like, oh, Claudette, you can't be the poster child. You're 15 years old. You're too dark and you're pregnant.
And you're knocked up. I mean.
Yeah, here, Claudette. But we'll see her later at the trial. There's gonna be a trial. She'll be there, but it is a little fucked up.
This is not fair.
I know. And also, so.
You know who was probably 15 and knocked up and dark-skinned? The Virgin Mary. And she carried Jesus.
Exactly. Boom. Exactly. All goes back to Jesus. Black Jesus, brown Jesus, dark Jesus. What you go? Chocolate Jesus.
And brown parents.
Just in time for Easter. So, all right. Myth number two. So now we're going to Rosa Parks, right?
Only on number two. I'll stop talking.
All right. So enter Rosa Parks. She was born in Tuskegee, Alabama on February 4th, 1913. So myth number two, she was old and tired and just weary lady. Y'all, she was 42. Okay. 42. That ain't old. All right. And you know what? She was tired of one thing. White supremacy and racism and having to give up her seat. That was the only thing. She wrote it in her autobiography. She's like, everyone was like, oh, I was so tired. She was like, no, tired of racism. That was it. Like, yes. So she was a civil rights activist before her arrest. She had been a longtime member of the NAACP, and she joined back in 1943, and she was the secretary of the local chapter until 1956. So she was like, you know, up in the game.
Up there. She was leadership.
Yeah. So, you know, she wasn't. Yeah. So part of her duties also included traveling across the state and interviewing victims of discrimination and witnesses to lynchings and reporting them back to her team. Like, again, like these, I want these words to sink in. That was their lives of having to interview folks that had witnessed lynchings. And we still to this day do not have a law, a federal law that makes lynching a crime. Just pointing that out there. And then, so her political activism continued through the boycott the rest of her life. Like, you know, she was all about it. And, you know, all of this, like, you know, she became the poster child because she was cute, she was light skinned, and she was an activist. So she was like the prime candidate. And black activists and civic leaders had, like I said, they've been wanting somebody to be the face of it. And when Rosa came along and she was like, nah, I'm not gonna, you know, give up my seat, not today, they were like, perfect. That's who we want. So, and you know, the only thing she was tired of was giving in. And a little fun fact is that she had finished high school at a time when that was rare. She received her diploma in 1933. Only about 7% of Black Americans at that time had earned
women.
That. And women. And again, it's like, I think like we gloss over these things in history because we painted this picture that was so far away. They put in these black and white photos. That was like yesterday. That was yesterday. She was still like,
not
yes.
That far
so
away.
Boom. So on the flip side, there's another myth. So on one side, they're like, oh, she was old and wearied and tired. There's this other myth that number three, that she planned it. She had planned it. No, that didn't happen. That didn't happen either. No, let's debunk this right now. Okay, so she did know that the NAACP was on the hunt for a plaintiff for this, you know, to test, you know, the constitutionality of Jim Crow with the buses, right? But she didn't plan it. However, James Blake was the bus driver that caused this whole entire kerfuffle for her, right? She had actually had an encounter with him 10 years prior when he demanded her vacate her seat 10 years before all this shit happened.
Oh, this is so a fun fact.
1943. Why is his name? James Blake. I never met a James I didn't like. Well, first time for everything. So fuck this guy. So James Blake, he had made Rosa Parks get up off of the bus after she had refused to re-enter the vehicle through the back door after paying. She paid her fare. She entered into the front. She was like, here's my money. I'm walking to the front door. Black folks were not allowed to enter the front door in 1943. So he told her to exit and re-enter through the back door, made a huge fuss about it. And so she was like, okay, fine. Like, this is what's so maddening. Bus driver, I need to get to where I need to go. And he's making this huge stink about it. So she's like, okay, fine. She gets off the bus to go in through the other door. He takes off.
That's such a power trip.
And she had already paid her fare also too, by the way. So she was like, I'm never riding that man's bus ever again. So for 10 years, and that's like how like insidious, what a madness white supremacy is. Like it just, it's just a madness for folks.
Yeah, like literally, I choose what door you get to walk through, and it's not this
right.
one.
This bus isn't going anywhere until you get off, and then I'm going to drive away. Like, what a sneaky, what a fucker. What a, like, cowardly move. She gets off. That'll show her. So Rose is like, I don't need the stress of my life. It's hard not being a black woman in this racist-ass world, whatever. So for 10 years, she kept an eye out. She made sure she never got on his bus. She was like, nope, not today, Satan.
That is
not today.
Extra. That's extra labor.
Except on this one day, she was not paying
attention.
Let
me give the one bus driver hell and make him remember.
But it was mainly because she didn't want to deal with, like, it was such a jarring, stressful, terrifying experience. She could have been murdered by him, right? Mm-hmm. He's white. She's black.
He'd get away
with it. It's easy to kill. Get away with it.
It still
right?
is, unfortunately.
Exactly. Still is. So she was like, I don't need the stress of my life. And so she was always keeping out for that bus because she was like not going to get on it. She forgot this day. She was like, she was like, had I been paying attention, I would not have gotten on that bus. Her mind was probably preoccupied with, doing activism. I don't know, lynchings, being a black woman, or maybe like, I want to like, you know, rest tonight or listen to something on the radio. I don't know, being a human being, but also the layer of being a black woman in this highly racist time,
in the South.
More racist than usual. And so she forgot and she got on that bus and boom. But again, so Blake called the police on her and once again, stopping the bus, like, I got to get to where I'm going, Mr. Bus Driver. And this is like where racism hurts everyone. And the same way, like, where like white people, when they're like, you can't have segregated pools, they're like, okay. And then they filled in the pools and made parks so that nobody gets a pool. Now no one gets to work on time. Like, it's a lot of work being a racist.
It is.
You could maybe just try, not.
It is a lot of effort to uphold your white supremacy.
It's just like so much like it sounds exhausting. Y'all take a vacation from your racism. Just take
so
a break.
So it was not planned.
She didn't
but
plan
there's
it,
this, like,
but she knew they were planning
dink.
It.
She knew they were planning. She had some intel, you know, being on leadership.
She
had a history with this guy, which is really, well, that's a surprise.
Yes.
Plot twist.
It was a lot of convergences. So, all right, myth number four. She was sitting. The myth of number four is she refused to get up out of her seat because she was sitting in an all-white section. No, that's not true either.
Ooh.
Okay, she was actually sitting in the front row of a middle section of the bus that was for black folks if seats were vacant, which, again, all this language is like these were the rules. So black people could sit there if there were seats that were vacant. And so she was sitting there. And after the whites-only section filled, after a few stops and a white man was left standing, then the driver demanded that she and the three other folks in the area leave their seats. So she's actually not just being, which is so dumb, which would have been in her right, but it's not like she did not just sit. She was following the rules. I can sit here. I paid my fare. I can't sit here either.
This is like, interesting, though, because the narrative, the myth makes it seem like she was such a badass and she walked in, you know, side-eyed and sat there in defiance. But you're telling me she was actually allowed. That's where she was told she could sit. It's like the most front place a black person can sit is where she sat. And that was still a fucking problem. My God.
She was actually just following the rules. Again, she's aware of all this shit that is happening. And she was a member of the NAACP. But just like there's all these different things. Like, let's get her. Her story is great. And Rosa Parks is a badass. But it's women's history. And that's why we got to come correct with it. Right? Let's get Miss Rosa's story correct. Right? Like, let's, you know, come correct with it. Because she was a...
And let's talk about this bullshit middle seat caveat laws that people make up, that white folks make up. You can have it, but only if we don't want it. And then when we want it, we have to have it.
Right? Like, y'all too much. Y'all exhausting me. Also, I mean, it makes me think, it also reminds me of like, man, like maybe we all should have just left. Like we should have just, you know, the other three moved. But that's when Rosa was like, no, I'm not doing it. Not today. I don't care. I'm not doing it. So she's a badass, right? All right. The last myth here, number five, which is a juicy one. So there's a myth that, like, you know, that's all you ever hear about. So if that's it, that's all Rosa did. She did that, and that was the end of, you know, her story, nothing more. No, she did a lot of other shit. So weeks after her arrest, she was also jailed for a second time for her role in the boycott. Remember, she's working with the NAACP. She's now the poster child. So she's like, all right, fine. I'm a Katniss Everdeen this shit, right? Like, I'm going to go for this. Like,
Put me on the front line.
All right, let's go. Like, she knew what this is all about. She's like, fine, I'll be your poster child. This shit is fucked up. This has been traumatic. All right. So she was on the executive board of directors of the group organizing the Montgomery bus boycott. So this thing gets started. She's like the match that lights it, and she's like, cool, I'm on the executive board, I'm helping to call these shots if we're gonna, you know, be putting my face all over the place. She also worked as a dispatcher for carpool rides, because all Black people they're not taking the bus, so they still need to get around. So she's helping like people get organized. And then on February 21st, 1956, a grand jury handed down indictments against Rosa Parks and dozens of others for violating a state law against organizing boycotting. So they're like, oh, you're going to jail. And so about her and 114 others were arrested. And the New York Times ran a front page photograph of her being fingerprinted by the police. And so that's the very famous photo that you see of her being fingerprinted. So it wasn't the first time this had happened. It was the second time she had gotten arrested. So what a badass. She's like, all right, I'm getting arrested again. Like, you know, yeah. Doing it before Jane Fonda made it fun.
After your first, it's like a tattoo. After your first one, it's like,
all right, cool. Lights, camera, action. Boom, boom, boom. Click, 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 click. Stop this racism.
The work boycotting. Continue.
Get it. So the boycott went on for 381 days. And then finally, the Supreme Court deemed that the city's segregated buses were illegal.
Yay!
And so, you know, and the case that helped decide it was, I believe it was Browder v. Gale. So Claudette Colvin, along with these other ladies who also got information for the Supreme Court, they were witnesses and plaintiffs in the Browder v. Gale case that resulted in the Supreme Court ruling that bus segregation was unconstitutional. And their names are Ariella Browder, Mary Louise Smith, and Susie McDonald. Go off Ariella Browder for getting top billing on that court case. So that's, you know,
that's at least
her name's on it. Yeah. So, okay. Yes.
You're
so,
firing me up. Like, women do something. Women the work continues.
100%. Women get this. They get this done. So, again, this goes back to, you know, the Supreme Court ruling. It came. And that, but it's just like, it's really fucked up because historians are like, yeah. Like, I mean, Rosa Parks is so important because historians always, they credit. They're like, yo, Rosa, she really kicked off this whole thing, like she really sparked the whole entire civil rights movement. And then Claudette Colvin's like, okay, like whatever, like I see you, like I did do this like 9 months before. And that's where people, like, they got the idea from Claudette. They're like, oh, we need to have someone be like the poster child to tell that story, because that's how you create empathy, is through having like a person, their story, this fucked up thing happen. I mean, you really look at, like, George Floyd has been the catalyst for this second reckoning and reconstruction and reformation and healing that, or coming to terms with, you know, he in the history books will go down as like, that was, you know, wasn't the only one that had ever happened. There was so countless. I don't have enough time on this podcast to mention all the names that had come before. Right.
Yeah.
But
He stood on the shoulders of those that came before, and he was the catalyst for what we needed.
Other things
now.
That happened to Rosa in the end of, like, you know, through the rest of her life, she was doing all this other stuff. She was forced to move from Montgomery soon after the boycott, because as you can imagine, like, white folks were losing their damn mind. Like, if you were black doing anything amazing or important, you best believe you got death threats. You're probably getting them now. She lost her department store job. And because they were like, but they were like, oh, it's not because of the boycott.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Girl, come on. Come on. Absolutely. Her husband quit his job after being told that there could be no discussions about the boycott or his wife in the workplace. So he's like, what else am I going to talk about? Like, hello, this is the huge thing that's happening.
The loves of my life.
Yes, exactly. Activism of my wife. Like, this is what I'm all about in my life. And then in 1957, so her and her husband were like, okay, we out of here. Getting out of the South. It's too racist for me. Let me go to Detroit. So they went up to Detroit. It was cracking. It was dope. And she eventually worked as an administrative aide for Congressman John Conyers Jr.
Whoa.
So also, Rosa Parks filed a lawsuit against a certain hip-hop group because they released a song titled Rosa Parks, Outkast. So she sued them. Rosa Parks was like, Outkast, what are you doing? So, okay, in 2005, the group agreed to work with the Rosa Parks and Raymond Parks Institute to help develop educational programming and inspire today's youth.
They found a middle ground. It was like two activists came together. They got in a fight and were like, let's put all of our hate and upsetness and frustrations towards a better cause. One we agree on. The children.
Yes. Last little bit here. The founder of Little Caesars paid Rosa Parks' rent for a year. So after surviving a robbery and assault in her Detroit apartment in 1994, she needed a new place to live. Mike Illich, the founder of Little Caesar, heard and he planned and offered to cover her rent as long as she needed it. And so he and his wife, Marianne, ended up paying for Rosa Parks to live in her safer apartment until her death in 2005 at the age of 92.
Oh, Little Caesars. Little Caesars.
Fuck you, Papa John's. And yes, Little Caesars. Like, I'm going to go buy some pizza right after this.
Not one of our sponsors.
So support Little Caesars, Papa John's. And this is another example of, like, as an ally, what can I do? This is it. This is it, allies. They weren't just like, hey, Rosa, let us know if you need anything. And the last thing, she was the first woman to lie in honor at the U.S. Capitol. So at 92, on October 24, 2005, she received a final tribute when her body was brought to the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol with more than 30,000 people had passed to pay their respects. So there it is. You can't talk about the civil rights movement without talking about the bus boycotts, which means you can't talk about that without talking about Rosa Parks. And then you can't do it without talking about Claudette Colvin. So wanted to celebrate these amazing women for Women's History Month. Be inspired. Thank you, Miss Rosa Parks. You are an inspiration. Thank you, Miss Rosa. Woo! You are for real.
Video games.
Video games.
Video games. You like them?
Maybe you wish you had more time for them?
Maybe you want to know the best ones to play?
Maybe you want to know what happens to Mario when he dies?
In that case, you should check out Triple Click. It's a podcast about video games.
A podcast about video games? But I don't have time for that.
Sure you do. Once a week, kick back as three video game experts give you everything from critical takes on the hottest new releases,
to scoops, interviews, and explanations about how video games work,
to fascinating and sometimes weird stories about the games we love.
Triple Click is hosted by me, Kirk Hamilton.
Me, Jason Schreier.
And me, Maddie Myers.
You can find Triple Click wherever you get your podcasts and listen at MaximumFun.org.
Bye.
All right, Natalie's Corner. Natalie's Corner.
Okay, so I was thinking, and I hadn't realized that Women's History was White Women's History Month, but I wanted to give some women of color shout outs in politics.
Because we got to rebrand it. We got to refix it, right? Jesus ain't white. Women's history is all the amazing, beautiful rainbow of the women.
Yes. So everybody already knows this, but it still warrants worth saying for Women's History. Kamala Harris made history, or her story, when she became the first woman of color year to hold the VP position.
Amazing.
We just yesterday, so what day is today? March 16th. So on March 15th, the Senate swore in our first Secretary of Interior, and she's a female Native American woman, Deborah Holland.
Yes.
That is amazing. I have a fun tidbit here. Let me read it. From New Mexico was confirmed as the Secretary of the Interior Department by a 51-40 vote in the Senate, making her the first American Indian to lead an agency that manages a vast portfolio of federal land and the oil and mineral wealth that lies beneath it. I mean, woman in power. Oh, I'm so excited.
But it's also too, because when you talk about like what I never really understood what the Secretary of the Interior, I feel like I've been Donald Trump forced me to understand civics in a way that I hadn't. I understand so much more about how government works, how impeachments work, like what all the different secretaries work. So it was like a good wake up call in a lot of ways. But I didn't realize what the Secretary of Interior, like, they deal directly with, like, tribal lands. It is insane that she is the...
And the national parks. The national parks. This is federal land.
This should be a position that is only ever held by First Nations folks. Like, it should never... I hope this sets the precedent. Like, no, anybody that's not First Nations should ever hold that position ever again. And it's insane that there was feet dragging about her holding this position. Fuck off. Yep. I'm done. These folks, it's too much.
She's also only the second Native American to ever be in Congress. The second.
You getting me hype because I love it. We were the women in the past and the women of today. Let's go. Give me more.
The women of today. They're of the 142 women serving in the 117th U.S. Congress. So that's our current Congress. 50 of those women. That's 35% are women of color. That's the most ever in American history.
Yeah. 50 women
have seats in
Congress. You know what I see?
And 142 are women.
I love that, first of all, there's 142 women in Congress, because I know that when you and I were kids.
Yeah, the most ever.
When you and I were kids, there was like, okay, there she is. Oh, there's the other one. Oh, that's it. Oh, that's the same one. Sorry. There's just the one. Like, I love that, like, and it's insane because it's like this should have been happened. But it's like, again, we are living through some monumental historic times. I love it. Ladies, getting information. That's what I see. Yes. Okay, ladies. Now let's get information.
They're getting you're starting to see women of color in leadership. I mean, I remember when I saw AOC. Mm. Become a woman of Congress. And I think she said something. She's also a Latina and I'm a Latina. She was like, wear your hoops and your red lipstick like your congresswoman. Yes. And I was like, I wear hoops and I have red lipstick. And that no longer means what it used to mean. It now means a new thing. And it means you are politics ready. That's what it means. Put your hoops on. We're signing some bills. Put your hoops and your red lipstick on. We're signing some laws.
Put your Converse on. We're signing some bills. Like, I saw you in your VP Converse. Like that's what Kamala's be wearing. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, and I think I made a little joke of, like, I now have VP shoes. I'm walking in VP shoes when I put on my Converse. Mm. And all little girls, all little brown girls, all little boys, when they put on, if they want to put on Converse.
Yep.
You're walking in VP shoes.
Yep. What am I doing? Being a VP.
Oh my God, I love it. Okay, so a little bit, I wanted to give some women of color shout outs just because we're killing it. We're out there. Rosa Parks, we stand on your shoulders. Claudette Colvin, we stand on your shoulders. And the work isn't over, the work continues. And last year, especially, I realized the importance of having BIPOC only women's spaces. So we're seeing all these like women of color enter into leadership, hold leadership positions, and like, who are their girlfriends? Who are they going to go talk to at night when they've put up with 1,001 microaggressions and doors in their face and hangups and side giggles and murmurs? Women's circles, like, call your girlfriends. So that's what I'm noticing. As I step into my leadership, I want to do bolder things. I actually want to be in spaces with only other women of color who just get it.
Maybe that's what Robin was singing about. Robin had a song called Call Your Girlfriend. And maybe that's what she
did. You think it was a lesbian relationship?
Call your girlfriend. But she's saying, call my girlfriend because I need some support.
Yeah, we need each other. We're not going to do this together. All the 50 women of color who are in Congress did not get there by themselves. They've got girlfriends. There's like that saying, the like behind every great man, behind every great man, there's a great woman. Behind every great woman, there's like 1,000 other great women.
Whoa, I love that. Because, you know, it also speaks to, you know, even in the civil rights movement, there's this idea that it was all these like dudes. About 50% like of the work that was being done was by women, if not more. But like women were in the streets, but all the pictures are like, you know, just the men in suits, right? But the women, they weren't getting the credit because sexism and patriarchy was still hanging out, still starring front and center.
The layers of our supremacy fruitcake here. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to tell you about women. Hang out with each other. You got each other's backs. My awesome, awesome friend Norma, who I met recently, says she's somebody I call when I have a truth bomb. What do we call it? A truth bomb. When you're a woman of color that stands up and says the brave thing, and then you like shrivel and you like freak out and you're like, oh my God, I just said this thing out loud and 30 people heard it and I was standing up to the man, and it's like a truth collapse. Like I told the truth, my truth, as I saw it, and now I feel really shitty about it. And so we call each other for our truth collab. So I think if I have to, my corners about women of color are killing it in politics. Thank you for having us see you. We see you and you're making a difference. And then when I think of like women of color, maybe you're not in politics, but you're a leader. Lean on your girlfriends, lean on your women, lean on women who are seeing it and have vocabulary and experiences like you, because it reinforces the vocabulary, it reinforces your perspective, and you get more bold telling your truth over and over and over again. And then you can do it in other settings too. And then my other one would be this, like my earth wisdom, decolonizing myself. I'm on this whole decolonizing kick.
Can I ask you, what's the homework assignment for all the men's out there? So we have like, ladies, support each other, get with each other, and for the men, or male identifying, or benefits from male privilege, what is the homework assignment for them?
Oh my gosh.
Us.
Hold each other accountable. So there's a lot of sexism. Hold each other accountable. Mm-mm. Your best guy friend just said a sexist joke. Dude, that's not cool.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
I had a partner, my first white partner. It got to the point where he wasn't even inviting me to barbecues because he would ask, so what would happen if this guy said this? And if I just let it slide, I would leave. I would grab my stuff and leave. That's not a safe space for me. And you would be colluding with upholding that. And so you and I would also be over. And it was like shocking to him.
I love that.
It was like shocking to him.
And you and I are done.
Like, yeah. No, there cannot be racist and sexist spaces where I exist. I'm a woman of color. So men, hold each other accountable and be friends. Like, if you can't say it to your homie, then who can you say it to? Practice saying it to each other. Practice being called out. Practice letting your ego down for a second, being like, oh, damn, that was fucked up. All right, I got totally called out.
Okay. Yeah. Like, again, are we all here to learn and grow?
No more slut shaming.
Yes. Yeah. All of that is gone. Call things out. Like, again, it's like, it goes back to the whole entire, you know, with your family who are watching Fox News. You got work to do. There's your assignment. You're like, what can I do? You got it right there. Get to work. To quote Britney Spears, get to work, bitch. I don't
get to work.
You got
to
work, bitch. There it is. You want to end racism? You better work, bitch. You want to end sexism? You better work, bitch.
Yeah, it's not going to be handed to you. That's the theme of today's Minority Corner. Nothing's guaranteed. It's not going to be handed to you.
No way. And because like we need you to do the work. We're tired. We're exhausted, you know?
We're Rosa Parks tired.
I don't want to get up. I'm not getting up out of my seat.
Tired.
Somebody else do something.
But the other kind of tired.
Yeah.
Like the ancestral memory tired.
Speak to it. Tell the kids.
Thank you for calling out the penises. What can penises do? Penis carriers. Oh, my other thing. I was going to talk about earth wisdom. So what else empowers, I think, me as a woman of color, or me as a Latina, I'm still doing a lot of my own work, right? Get to work, do the internal work. Having a spirituality. And right now I'm doing this like really interesting thing where my spirituality is getting decolonized. Like I'm starting to engage in my decolonization work. And to me, that means like my great grandmothers had carried earth wisdom. They knew how to work with plants and they knew how to pray with the earth. And we understood, it's not a religion, but we understood different archetypes. And then colonizers came and were like, stop your barbaric rituals. Stop all of this. You
put that
this
out.
Is not how you live. You will now be Catholics and you only believe in Jesus Christ and blah, 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 blah,
and
blah.
He looked white. You see this?
Oh, yeah. He was blonde white. And blue-eyed. He looked like us and we are now gods and you
didn't
obey
he live
us.
In the Middle East? Yeah, whatever. They all were white back then.
Exactly. So what is the heritage? What is the grandmother wisdom that I would have gotten if we had not been interrupted, right? And so my own, like why I talk to plants, why I love flowers, the color and smell of flowers, the lavender, like that is what I come alive in. Why I can be outdoors for days. Why when I pray to with trees, right? Like I feel like I can talk to trees and rocks and stones and waters and lakes. Like that is inherent in me and that's coming alive in me. And I don't want to ignore it. And so I'm finding that a lot in the, right? Because I'm huddled with other women of color and bold, courageous leaders who will say the thing. We say the courageous thing. And that's what I'm finding out in all of us. We're all kind of going back to what our great grandmothers knew, but got cut off from us. And one of those things for me is earth wisdom. So you had asked me, you know, what are we learning about spring? Well, earth wisdom is following the cycles of the earth. We have seasons. The earth has seasons. And when you didn't have electricity or lights and you lived in huts and you lived closer to nature, you definitely noticed. And we notice now the chilly air or it's more sunny and I have more energy or it's warmer and I got to change my clothes and I'm going to open my windows and it's time to turn off the heater for good. So there's like little clues that the season is changing. But the reality is like this planet that mothers all of us is doing a seasonal shift and we should pay attention to what that means. And if we can align to it, our lives will be a little bit easier. So it's a very long way of saying it's spring and spring is a time when we come out of our caves and we're ready to like take action. And it's also a time when we can see things like when you're in winter and you're in your cozy like blanket, Netflix and chilling and dreaming a lot and eating and putting on eating comfort food. That's natural. That's natural. All of Earth does that. The bears, the trees, everyone's doing that around you. So just kind of not being so harsh on yourself and realizing you're part of something so much bigger. We all share this planet together. And it's like a dance and you're a part of it all. You're a part of it all. And you have these things in common with everything else. And then my last plug is, because we talked a lot about politics today and getting active. I sit on a board of the Citizens Climate Lobby. It's a climate change organization. We are bipartisan, which is edgy. So I sit on a board with conservatives. I think they call themselves fiscal conservatives. Mm-hmm. I'll explain that at another time. Sidebar.
Put a pen in that.
I know. That's a whole nother Minority Corner conversation. But CCL is all about engaging your political will. So we teach civic education. What does it look like for you to grow your relationship with your political leaders nearby? And then what does it look like for you to be a citizen and ask for laws and bills, demand actually, laws that will mitigate climate change? Because it's happening. It's happening. And we want to have a planet. Yeah. Right? I pray with the earth. My great-great-grandmothers prayed with the earth. And I'd love for my great-grandchildren to still have an earth to pray to and to be in. And right now we're at risk of not having clean air, clean water, or fertile soil because of what we're doing to our planet. We are literally headed towards an unhabitable planet. And we're seeing that now in California. So that's a little bit of it's spring. It's time to go get activated. Go live your dreams. Go do something awesome. Go do the things that you want to do. And if you can get political, get political. It's time. It's not going to be handed to you. There's no guarantee. Yeah.
J. to our AAPI sisters and brothers. In light of the recent attack in Atlanta, we here at Minority Corner are sending y'all love, healing, support during these times. You know, as we discussed on the show, hate crimes are on the rise. And to do actually a quick fact check, almost 4,000 hate crimes have been reported in the past year. And that is actually an increase of 150%. That is atrocious. That is unacceptable. And we know why this attack happened. This was not someone just having a bad day with sexual addiction. This was white supremacy. White supremacy is a disease which has been raging for centuries. And like many diseases, disproportionately affects those of the BIPOC communities at different rates, at different levels. But you know what? It will persist until it no longer has a body to infect. So we must work together to eradicate this. We are the vaccine. And to you all, my heart breaks for you because I know what you're experiencing. Your Black sisters and brothers, they know. And when we say that, it's real, it's legit. I hate that anyone has to experience it. I wish that I could shoulder the burden for you. In some ways, I'm used to it. And I wouldn't wish this upon anybody. But I guess in some ways, I feel many of us probably in the Black community are kind of hardened by this. Because again, we're so used to experiencing it. So this might be new and processing it. It might be really confusing or frustrating or angry. And to that, in solidarity, I say, your feelings are valid, and you might not even know what to feel or why you're feeling anything. And because sometimes maybe you think, you know what, this didn't happen to me, but it did. This hits close to home. So your emotions, your feelings, your thoughts, your frustrations, whatever it is, they are valid because you are witnessing, you are experiencing the effects of the caste system, which spares no member of the BIPOC community. Because remember, we've talked about in the podcast before this idea of linked fate, which BIPOC folks experience at higher rates. The idea when one thing happens to a member in our community, good or bad, we experience that. Because this could, we see us, we see our family, we see our friends, we see our community members, and we're reminded about this caste system that we are put into place here in the United States. So I encourage you to take the time to take care of you in this moment. Talk about this and process this with your family, your communities, your allies, your real allies, whoever you can in this moment. Wrap yourself around that and lean on your Black brothers and sisters, because again, we truly do understand the experience that you're going through. And to my Black folks, you're probably already doing it. Reach out, because we know what they're going through and how confusing this can be. And to everyone, everyone, everyone must step up. Words matter. Language matters. I mean, we can date back all the way to the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1883 and before and after that, the experiences and what has created after that, the Asian American community has experienced, the racism, the jokes, the oppression, you know, this shooting. And, you know, it's there's a lot in it. But when there's a one aspect to really, you know, look at historically where this has roots, there's a line. You can draw a line between the words that Donald Trump said and this, between the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1883 and this, to the jokes and things that people have said, to the real war crimes and horrors that the U.S. has committed against Asian women in particularly through militarization and imperialism and colonization. We have to be the cure. For us, the allies, you know, think of this as bringing warm blankets and food to whatever an individual or community might need. The Asian community is not a monolith, so check in with each person what they need. And you might not even know, those of you in that community, what it is that you need. But if you can ask for something, ask for it. And also just say, I don't know. And we'll be there. We'll help to fill in the blanks. If it's not that, okay, say no to that, no to that, yes to that. So we're going to give space, we're going to listen, we're going to support, we're going to take action. This will not stand. I am here for you. We are here for you. I stand with you. We stand with you. So this is a great opportunity and time to, for those of you who are not in that community, if you're looking for allyship, read up, follow folks on social media, watch different movies or stories, do all the things that you know to do of how to be an ally in this emergency situation. Okay, well, that is our show. Remember, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever. Spotify, I don't know if Spotify actually does reviews. So I don't know. Maybe you can be the first. And you can also send us an email at minoritycorner@gmail.com. Ask us anything. We'll answer it with me and my guest co-host for the day. And a big thank you to Sarah Brown, our editor, and to Sam Jackson, our social media manager as well. And a big thank you to our Maximum Fun members and all of our listeners of Minority Corner. Thank you for listening to Minority Corner, because together we're the majority. Love y'all. Take care of each other.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.